CGTV。
Boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. I really raised the roof with a lot of you yesterday, telling you that Paul expects us to be subject to the superior authorities. Took a lot of flack. Took a lot of flack for that. And to which I answer, don't shoot the messenger. Didn't say it was easy. I just said, be subject to the superior authorities. But people don't like to be subject to the superior authorities. I understand that. It's difficult. Well, what if the superior authorities tell you to take the mark of the beast? Well, that's a good question. We're not going to be here for that. Someone else brought up Acts chapter 5. I saw it coming. Acts chapter 5, Peter and John say it's better for us to obey God than to obey man, and they refused the orders of the Sanhedrin. Well, for one thing, the Sanhedrin was a religious body. It was still a superior authority, but that's all moot because Romans 13:1 hadn't been written yet. You can't go to Acts chapter 5 and apply a truth that hasn't even come into being yet. The truth of being subject to the superior authorities belongs to this era of grace, this era of God being conciliated to the world, which did not begin until Paul was called on the road to Damascus. And when the mark of the beast issue comes up, we will be gone, and so Paul will once again not apply. Paul only applies during the time of Paul. Again, Romans 13:1 didn't exist until Romans 13:1. In fact, if we look in Peter's later writings, the same man who in Acts chapter 5 said it's better for us to obey God and not man, he refused the authorities, the religious authorities. This same man is telling people to be subject to kings, to be ideal citizens. So what happened to this guy? Well, Acts 13:1 intervened. The era of the nations came, the conciliation was announced, and now this is how we are to act. Now, if the government told you to do some heinous thing, should you do it? Let's go to the ultimate. Let's say the government told you to kill your children. Would I do it? No. But if somebody did it, would they have recourse? Yes, you would have a scriptural recourse if you did it. Because the facts are in, folks. I didn't write the verse. The governments are operating God's mandate. That's God's mandate coming through the superior authority. As much as you don't like it, as heinous as it could be. Somebody else brought in Nazi Germany. What if the Nazis told you you couldn't hide the Jews? Then don't hide the Jews. Let God sort it out. If you want to break the law, if you have to, yeah, okay. I'm not saying, yeah, it's human to break the law. And to do good, right? To do good. I understand that. I'm not saying that I could do it. I'm just saying that's the ideal. That's what's set up. And yes, and if you refuse to help Jews because the Germans made it illegal, let's say, then you would have scriptural recourse. You could stand before God and say, well, you told me that you were enacting your will through the superior authorities. And God would have to say, yeah, you got a point there, kid. Yeah, you're right. I did say that. Okay, you're off the hook. And you would be. And you would be. All right. Divine principles of sexual attraction. Wait a minute. Can't talk about this book without I apply my egoist cologne. All right. You will read things in this book that you've never heard anywhere else. Because I've studied this topic for years, thought about it for decades, why sexual attraction is even in the world, why it's so strong. And I've found that it's a parable of the great truth that God is going to draw all humanity to himself. What did Jesus say? Was it John 6:44? If I be lifted up, I will draw all humanity to myself. Drawing power. Where do we see a parable of this drawing power? In the sexual attraction, right at the beginning in Genesis, when God made Eve out of the hollow angular vault of Adam. I've said this to you before, it was not a rib, that God took from Adam, it was his female parts. Adam was a complete human being. Adam had both parts. He had the uterus, the fallopian tubes, the vagina, the whole thing, and his parts as well. He was what we would call today a hermaphrodite. The perfect human being. The perfect human being. But there was one thing missing, and that was longing. Adam was completely self-satisfied. God created a woman, took the womb out of the man, built a woman out of that, and he said, therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and cling to his wife. Adam is drawn toward Eve. Now, the drawing starts with her. She's the pulling force. She's the sun that Adam revolves around. This is the way it was set up in Eden. That's why men should never feel guilty or ashamed for being attracted to women. And women should not resent men or think them animals or perverts that they are drawn toward them, because this is how they are wired by God. It has a lot to do with that 5 quarts of testosterone going through the body. God did that. What's the parable then? Well, before I tell you what the parable is between the sexes and what it pictures, I will say that the whole universe screams parables. God put the sun and the stars and the moon for times and for seasons, but also to teach us lessons. For instance, the sun coming up every day and going down every day, that is a, and if you know, the Jewish day starts at sundown. This is brilliant. This is genius. This is God. Our day starts at sunrise. Like, the day begins, and then we have to look forward to the night. That's ugly. I don't like that. Evening is a difficult time for me these days. Okay? It has been for many years. But no, the Jewish day is not like that. In the Jewish day, the evening is the beginning of the day. That way you have to look forward to the light. You look forward to the dawn, to the sun coming out. So the daily cycle, the cycle of the sun, is a picture that good conquers evil. In the morning, the good comes back. Night is always associated with evil in the scriptures. The soldiers came to get Christ by night. A lot of shady stuff happens at night. By the light of the moon, people do evil things at night. Night is bad. That's why you lock your door and go to bed and try to sleep through, the son of a bitch, because it's so hard. Thank God, what a mercy, right? I feel bad for you folks working the midnight shift, but at least you're occupied, you're doing something during a horrible time called the night. It's a picture that good conquers evil. Good conquers evil. I hope that's the way I said it the first time. I hope I didn't say evil conquers good. What about the seasons? Martin Zender, tell us about those. Glad you asked. I lived in Ohio for 50 years, and during the winter, you couldn't imagine how summer could ever show up. You couldn't imagine how grass could ever spring up through that ice. And yet it did. Every spring, flowers would come up, grass would come up. What does that speak of? Anybody? Resurrection. Yes, God brings life out of death. And it repeats itself every year, just as every 24 hours we get this picture that God is coming, that good conquers, that yes, the night goes on and on, but joy comes in the morning. When does joy come? At night? No, joy comes in the morning, according to the Word of God. So if the sun and the seasons speak of such great truth, what does this amazing power between men and women speak of? It also speaks of a great truth. And procreation is incidental. Procreation, I contend, in divine principles of sexual attraction, procreation is not the primary reason for the draw, specifically the draw, the attraction, the pull between the sexes, because I would think that you wouldn't need to have that pull to make children. God could have said, well, we're going to make children here, insert bolt B into lock nut C, withdraw, wait 9 months, you know, produce child. It could have happened clinically. You could still do it that way. The man could still put that in there. Oh, by the way, isn't that a perfect picture of what Adam lost in Eden? He regains in the sexual embrace, he regains what he lost in Eden. It's a coming together. That's why humanity becomes one in a picture, in another parable. That's another parable, that humanity becomes one. And we know in the resurrection, there's neither male nor female. This is suggested in the sexual union. The two shall become one flesh, because the parts are rejoined. Adam wants to get back to the old neighborhood, as I've told you before. But there's a bigger parable than that even, and that is that God created motion in Eden. Eve's name means life, the Hebrew word chava. Adam, Adam, means humanity. Life springs from woman, just as life springs from God. Adam represents the human race as a whole. So Adam is going toward the woman, and this pull of Adam towards beauty. And I've told you this before. It's a good time to repeat it. Wait a minute. God made woman beautiful because he is beautiful. Woman is evidence that God is beautiful. God is not just strong. He's not just mighty. He's beautiful. When we see God, we will see God in the face of Christ. But we will behold such beauty that a woman is a picture of. This is why when men see women, they go, oh my God. Of course, they know instinctively. God. Yeah, it's amazing. And in Revelation 21, when the New Jerusalem comes down from heaven, it says it comes down as a bride adorned for her husband. Why doesn't it say a husband adorned for his bride? Because men are not adorned. Men are not decorated, relatively speaking. I mean, yeah, you can spruce up a little bit. You can put on the cologne. But when we wake up in the morning, what you see is what you get. This is how I look all day. But women have this amazing capacity with makeup, with oils and lotions. And you remember the story of Esther. This is in the Bible. Esther, the beauty treatments of the women. She was submitted. She submitted herself to these beauty treatments. A lot of women, I think some women, probably mostly feminists, they resent this. And they think, oh, why do we have to do all this? How come we have to wear makeup? Because you represent God. I'm not saying you don't represent God without makeup, but you have this capacity to become beautiful. It was always, not that you're not beautiful, I'm really having to tread carefully here, but I probably can't win, so I'm just going to forge ahead. It's always amazing to see in People magazine the pictures of famous women with makeup and without makeup. It's incredible. Very rarely does a woman look the same. Very rarely. It's God that said a wife is adorned for her husband. How is she adorned? Well, she's bedecked with jewels. She wears a beautiful gown. And women, as you know, are into cosmetics, as it should be. All is right with the world. When a woman walks into Lancôme or some of those cosmetic places, it's a giant industry. Now, my question to you is, tell me where the cosmetic industry for men exists. Where is the cosmetic store for men? It's not there. Why? Because we do not have the same capacity as woman to be beautified. Why? Because we don't represent God in this great parable. We represent humanity, the human race. Woman represents God. If you're a woman listening to me, God bless you. I mean, it's so amazing. I can't believe I'm on the same planet as you. And I mean that with all my heart. Women are like from another planet. It's just, I'm almost speechless, almost. And I know that women who have been mistreated by men, and yes, men have historically mistreated women, and some people tell me they still do today. That's terrible. I can't understand. I don't understand how you can mistreat a woman. But anyway, so women have rebelled against this role, and you see the ones who are rebelling. They're the ones out with the sweatpants and the floppy sweatshirt with the picture of Winnie the Pooh on it and hair tied up into that horrible tight thing. It's sad, very sad. That's part of the broken world we live in, and it makes me want to cry. But when I see a woman who knows that she knows instinctively, might not know it until now, I'm telling her this, I'm telling you this, women. Maybe you know it now consciously because I'm telling you, but, and I spell it out in this book, but you know subconsciously that's why you put lipstick on, you wear makeup, you put a little rouge here, you do things with your hair. I talked about hair before many times because you represent God in this parable. In this parable, I'll just read the back of my book. Sexual passion. This is the text on the back of my book. Sexual passion is a parable so high that it dwarfs even the sun and stars in the realm of revelation. Sexual power pictures for us the drawing power of God. The power of a woman to draw a man is a microcosm of God's ability and intention to return all humanity to himself. The longing of a man. Well, don't you want to get this book now? You got to get this book. I'm going to spend a couple, maybe 3 days bringing you treasures from here. A man being drawn to a woman, and it's happening right now. Oh, is it happening right now? It's happening right now. It's happening very subtly, and it's happening very intensely right now. These people don't know what they're doing. I'm not talking about technique now. I am talking about they don't know that they're part of this parable. Women don't know that they represent the power of God to draw you the human race. Men don't understand that when they're going toward and being pulled toward a beautiful woman, they don't understand that they are playing a part. They are showing the celestial world. The celestial world is looking in. They are showing the celestial world that all humanity will one day return to God. And all humanity longs for God. That's what it is. All humanity longs for God. And even the people who deny that, atheists, they will still long for a woman. They still go for the women. They don't know why they're so beautiful. Right? Men are puzzled by women's beauty. It's a mystery to them. It's a mystery. All they know is they love it. They're addicted to it. It's amazing. It's meant to be this way. But they're tacitly and subconsciously admitting that God is beautiful and that they would be drawn to God. Like they're drawn to the woman, they would be drawn to God if they knew how beautiful he was. Here's where Paul's evangel comes in to this mix, is that Paul's evangel is the truth about God. And we see in Paul's evangel, the evangel of the transcendent grace of God, we see God's love, God's grace, God's beauty in his dealings with humanity. Loves us so much, sent his own son to die on the cross for us. That is beautiful. But in a physical sense, God is also physically beautiful. We see it in creation. Yes, you can see it in a flower. Yes, you see it in some cute animals. But it is not seen anywhere as it is in woman. I do have a picture of I have some great graphics in here that you don't want to miss. Women with this great capacity to be made beautiful. You don't want to miss this. Look at this. Yeah, look at that. What beauty. What gorgeousness. Look, she's got lipstick on. She's wearing some nice eyeshadow. What does that... How is it that that stuff transforms a woman? It's in the Bible, in the book of Esther. It's in Revelation chapter 21. Society is not evil or sinful for doing this. It's in women to do this because deep down they know. So, women, you're not vain for wanting to look beautiful. You are part of a great parable. Men, you are not perverts for desiring to see and to be with members of the opposite sex. This has been built in you by God. He created that need in the Garden of Eden. It has been going on ever since. And it has produced some very fine cologne companies.